Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 44.
Divisible by 11.
That's true.
It's important to note these things.
We've only had three of them now, or four of them now. We've had three, and now we have four.
I have been missing the episodes that are divisible by Ocho.
Yeah.
Like 40 was divisible by, you can get your Ocho right up in there.
I know, we still got another four to go before we hit another one.
Mm-hmm. That is how math works.
I'm very good at math. I was like, what's the last one we did that's divisible by 8? 24?
Or that time that after 32 came 30.
32, well, that's how numbers work. 30, 31, 32, 30, 32, 33, 34, 34,
I mean, sometimes,
34, 34, 35,
sometimes
36.
A number is so good that it needs to be twice.
So nice, you use it twice?
Truly. So, so
truly. So truly. This is episode 44. This one is brought to you also by Rockstar Pure Zero Energy Drink, but this one is Mango Orange Passion Fruit flavored.
Is it less disgusting?
Yeah, it's a lot better. I would.
Does it? It tastes a little bit less like cat butthole.
Yes, it does contain no juice.
Well, I'm glad they're up front
there
about
are,
that.
The flavor is Mango Orange Passion Fruit. Three fruits. There is no juice in this. No juice at all. That would give it calories.
Sure. And that would certainly give it calories.
There's no calories in this, just sodium and some sugar alcohol.
It's made with pure wizardry.
Yeah. Gandalf.
Yes, Gandalf.
Puts his stick down in, like, the vat. Mm-hmm. Just focuses for a second and it turns orange.
And he just teabags it.
I don't know why you have to. Why do we have to take it there, Eric?
I do what I want.
Why do we have to go to immediately sexual Gandalf references?
Because it's hilarious. I mean, come on. An old Maiar, he comes down from the stars to save your world and to teabag your Rockstar energy drink.
So
I do this for your amusement,
so
Robbie.
So quickly off the rails. That didn't take very long.
Why should it take long?
Just cut to the quick.
From 0 to 60.
Meow!
Vroom!
We are on the same wavelength there.
Yep.
Before we begin, I'd like to also mention MegaCon. In less than one week's time, we will be in the Orange County Convention Center. That's what it is. Not Orlando County.
Yeah, it's one of those. Orlando is in. Yes.
In Orlando, in the Orange County
Convention Center. The OCD Convention
Orange County Convention Center. MegaCon, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all 3 days. We will be there. Yes, we're at MegaCon in Independent Press booth number 868. That's 868, 868. We are on a corner booth in the Independent Press area. So come visit us, say hi. We'll have like a station set up with like an emulator and a goldfish bowl so you can win a prize. And we'll be there and be handsome.
And mm-hmm. Oh, I know I will be.
Well, I'm actually going to make myself ugly.
You're gonna tracksuit drag.
I'm gonna wear prosthetics.
Oh, cool.
On my face, like they did.
So you're gonna have like a plastic arm coming out of your face.
Not prosthetic limbs. Like they did like they did with Charlize Theron in Monster. They uglied her up.
Okay, you are just like Charlize Theron.
That's what I think so. That's what I see when I look in the mirror.
Naturally. You should probably look at replacing your mirror, though.
Why?
I think it's haunted.
Haunted? My mirror's not haunted. It looks great.
Okay. That's fine.
But anyway, folks, that's give you some warning. It's going to be amazing. Come see us. If you're in the Central Florida area, you should go to MegaCon and say hi.
MegaCon has gotten so much better the past couple of years. I'm really excited for it.
It will be good.
It should be truly excellent. It's a very fun con.
It is.
You want to tell me how handsome I'm looking?
You are always very handsome looking.
You're right.
Anyway,
you look all right.
Thank you. Anyway, handsome.
I can't see.
We have
you.
A great episode coming up. We got books of the week. A very interesting discussion about the Sinestro Corps War by Jeff Johns and Dave Gibbons.
Yeah.
Dave Bloody Gibbons. But first, we're gonna go right into checking in.
Cool.
There we go. Eric said something.
I'm giving you time to edit in noises.
You don't need to do that.
Are you sure? I think that's how editing works. That you
no,
can't.
No, I'm fairly. You do not have to leave. It takes noise. It takes time. You don't have to leave time. I can. It makes it.
I
appear.
Don't think so. I think you need to leave exactly the right amount of space to put in a sound in.
All right,
you're making this podcast with like audio tape, right? Like on cassettes.
All right, checking in is the segment where Eric and I discuss the nerdy things we do from week to week, and give you suggestions or anti-suggestions, which is a thing because I just made that up.
I approve of your thing.
All right. Eric, what were you up to this week?
I, because I'm a huge weeaboo, have been watching a new anime, and it's really, like, kind of crazy good.
I've heard about it.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of hype.
Yeah, it's called Attack on Titan, and it is on the Netflix, and if you...
Ooh, it is? It's on Netflix
it
now?
It is on Netflix. That's where I'm watching
it.
It awesome. Is... intense. It is really, really bleak, and it is surprisingly hard to predict. I hate that I'm starting to compare everything to Game of Thrones, but it reminds me a lot of Game of Thrones. Humanity has been almost annihilated by a force of monsters that they appear human, except they're giants. They eat people. And it's really surreal because you're like watching these sort of brainless, like human looking monsters just picking up and eating people. It's really unnerving to watch it. But it makes me think of sort of like the White Walkers almost, and you know how there's the wall, and there's it's a similar situation that like one of humanity's last bastions, they're walled off in this large city. And it starts with the they're translated as the Titans. I think they're calling them Chojans, which I don't know where they got Titan from. It seems an odd... It seems like it was a decision that was made on this side, but I really don't know. I've not researched it too much. But anyway, the story begins with one of the major cities like being breached. And just horrible shit happening. Like you see the main character watches his mother get bitten in half by a Titan. And it's grisly as fuck too. Oh my god, it's so grisly. And then you go a couple of episodes and then the main character gets his arm and leg bitten off and then he's eaten. And you're like,
hey, spoilers.
Well, it is a spoiler, admittedly. But you have it. It keeps you guessing. Like, that happens maybe five episodes in.
Now I can't watch
no,
it.
You can't.
Now I have to come and hunt you down and murder you.
Just dig your eyes out and don't watch anything.
Well, I didn't...
What? You have to do that. Now, I've commanded you to do that.
You're not my boss.
I am.
No, you're not.
I am.
You're not the
boss. What this piece of paper says.
I will burn it.
Okay. Well, have fun with that. Anyway, yeah, he gets eaten. So you're like, what the hell's happening now? I have to have a new main character. It's very unpredictable and very strange, and shitloads of people die, and it's really bleak. So naturally, I recommend it for everyone from, you know, ages 2 to 200.
I don't know about the ages 200 people. I mean, they're a little delicate.
They are. No, it is not the thing to watch with your grandma. It is really brutal.
Well, I'll make sure to watch that and try and forget all the things you just spoiled for me.
I didn't spoil anything. Trust me.
Spoiler!
You have no idea what's going to happen the whole time. Trust me. It's bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
That is how you spell bananas.
Bananas.
That's, I'm so glad that you've got a case of the sillies. What is your problem?
Rockstar Pure Zero.
Yeah, you need more caffeine.
Mango, I've not had orange, passion fruit.
I've not had any caffeine, and I have napped for like 2 hours today.
Well, that's naps are good.
So I assume you sat around and stared at the wall all day, forever since we've last spoke.
No, actually, I've done things.
That's pretty good. What did you do?
I slept.
See, that's almost like staring at the wall.
I went to work.
So that's what you're checking in with, sleep and work?
No.
I think people know about sleep and work.
No, I'm checking in with Stephen King's latest novel, Dr. Sleep, which is a sequel to The Shining.
A sequel to The Shining.
It stars Danny, growing up Danny.
Grown up Danny.
Yep, he is now in his... There's a time period basically from when he's 30. It's in a 10-year time period so far from when he's 30 to 40 years old. You've read Stephen King. I know you have read some Stephen King.
Not very much.
Okay.
What I've read, I have enjoyed. I like the way he writes.
Yeah, this is a Stephen King novel. It is certainly not a departure from anything he's done before, which, I mean, I think he's hit a certain point in his career where he's just, you know, he's writing what he wants. Everything makes $1 billion because he's Stephen King.
I mean, honestly, why, after you've written 900 novels, would your 901st be different?
Exactly. But it certainly has a lot of motifs and themes from a lot of other people with mental powers. Gypsies and the evils of gypsies.
I think he's really terrified of gypsies.
I mean, it's really interesting how he uses that kind of the ideas we have of gypsies and hobos and all that to create these characters in this novel. This is basically, it sees Danny battle alcoholism just like his father did. Which, I mean, The Shining. Have you read The Shining?
I have not read The Shining. It never seems like a thing I would do.
It's surprisingly short, and it is about addiction. Stephen King was addicted to cocaine when he wrote it, and
interesting.
And he didn't consciously make it about addiction, but it is clearly about addiction. And he, now that he's not an addict, or at least not. He's a recovering addict, if you want to call it that. This book is also kind of about addiction. Danny is an alcoholic, and a lot of it is about him fighting alcoholism. And, of course, like every Stephen King novel, like there's a mixture of physical, actual, you know, dangers mixed with metaphorical demons like alcoholism. But
interesting.
It sees Danny kind of take up the role that Dick Halloran did in the original. He is the kind of the cook who works at the hotel, who is kind of his mentor. And he turns to be a mentor for a young girl who is even more powerful than him, probably one of the most powerful shiners there are. And she is encountering this band of gypsies called the True Knot. K-N-O-T, who are all also have different kind of mental abilities, but are not human anymore to a certain extent. And they kind of feast on children who have these abilities.
But this offends my proud gypsy heritage.
I know. I really didn't like it at first. And I used to be obsessed with Stephen King. I've mellowed out as I've gotten older. And I think a lot of teenagers get obsessed with Stephen King because he's very approachable. He's easy to read. And yet he has lots of ideas that are weird and are like really attractive to a teenager, you know, when they're going through puberty. I think a lot of his fiction is actually geared towards that kind of the change you encounter in your life as you're going through your teenage years. But Dr. Sleep's really good. I haven't finished yet. I think halfway, three quarters through, and it's really, really good. Definitely suggest it. I also stopped at Renfest. Saw, you know, Renfest things.
So, what area? The Deerfield Beach Renfest?
It's literally in a park that is 5 minutes away from us.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't out of your way.
No, it was very close.
You just trip over a rock and fall into a Renfest.
Yes, we saw many. I think we made the joke today that people go to Renfest to buy clothes for the next Renfest.
That sounds pretty accurate.
Because literally, it's gigantic. It's the biggest Renfest I've ever been to. And there is, like, 50% of the vendors and stalls there are just corsets and leather clothes and boots that you can wear to the next Renfest.
I do need to pick up a new corset.
Yeah, and jerkins and kilts and all those other things.
What's a jerkin?
It's like a leather thing that goes around your waist.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a ye olde wear.
Ye olde wear.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, exactly. We saw some really cool carny entertainers who, you know, jugglers and acrobats and stuff. Really, really fun, interesting. Saw a falconer. That was cool. But other than that, you know, it's Renfest. It's fun.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Did you eat some pickled garlic?
No, I had.
Did you eat a turkey leg?
Did not eat a turkey leg. We had apple cider mini donuts. We both had Euros. Ice cream.
I'm going to get my Dapper Day costume and wear it to Ren Faire.
There were people who were wearing clothes like that, so
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't want to because Ren Faire is really dirty.
Yeah, it was very windy today as well, so yay! Dust in my face.
Yeah, I always go home with like a pound of dirt boogers that I have to pick out when I get home.
Yeah, it's like a comic book convention, but outdoors, kind of.
Well, in the dirtiest place they can find. It's so filthy. Jeez,
man.
Man, jeez.
Come on, Renfest, calm it down there with the dirt.
I know, man.
I know.
Just got to dirty it up.
Dirty it up.
How can you tell he's a king?
He's not covered in shit.
That is true.
That is true.
That's how you clean the shit off. You're a king.
Yep. We are sufficiently checked in.
It feels sufficient to me.
Yeah, and we're going to move on to the next segment, the floppiest part of the week. It is time for weekly floppies.
Certainly the floppiest part of mine. By a wide margin.
Wide margin.
Whatever that means, but sure.
Weekly Floppies is the part of the show where Eric and I take a look at a handful of the week's books and tell you if you should buy them or not. And you should listen to us.
You probably should. We know what we're talking about.
We are educated men.
Yes.
Yes. We are men.
I had to think about it because that's what educated people do. They reflect.
They think before they speak.
Yep.
We're going to start off this week with Captain Marvel number one. I have to say it in a voice like that, though.
Captain Marvel number one.
Because she's in space, so I have to sound like a space person. This is written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by David Lopez, colors by Lee Luffridge, and letters by Joe Caramagna. This book starts off with kind of a flash forward with Captain Marvel doing like a space undercover mission or something, even though she's in full costume.
It's a good way to be sort of on the DL there.
Yeah, I always, when I'm trying to be, inconspicuous, I wear a giant red and blue costume with a star.
I just, like, get a sign and hang, like, write my name on it and hang it around my neck.
Just to make sure people know and then ignore you.
Yes. But, like, you can look away now that you know who I am what I'm here doing.
So it starts off showing you that, and then we kind of jump into the back to the current day, I guess, or I don't know. It sets the space as the present, but it doesn't feel like it, because last we left off, she was just living in the Statue of Liberty, chilling, losing her memory.
Just living there.
Yep. And
being a mentor.
Yeah. The Avengers have decided they need some more space presence, and she kind of volunteers to go out there to find herself, I guess.
It seems like Tony is trying to, like, talk her into it.
Yeah, he's being a
little he's being a little manipulative. You know who would be good to go into space? Not you.
Yeah, you're
terrible. What do you mean? I totally want to go to space. Oh, whatever.
We need the best pilot we have. Rhodey!
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. I liked
it.
He's
making, like, shitting grin as he flies away.
Yes, well, that's the Tony Stark I can get behind.
It is.
Yeah. I kind of like this little secret romance she's having with the War Machine.
Yeah, it was a cute scene.
I think that makes sense. They're both, like, you know, pilots and military people and superheroes.
Yeah, it feels pretty good.
Yeah, but then, you know, she's gonna go off into space, which I think that has potential. Her and you know, Captain Marvel in space. I'm not sure I really buy into that little short scene at the beginning, but we aren't really connected to any of these side characters, which I think is what is going to sell her adventures in space. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the charm of the last amount of stories was kind of her supporting cast, you know, the old lady and the little girl and her cat. Yep. And all that shit. She better take her cat with her outer space.
I am not going to ask for that. I really wonder if I'm going to like it if it takes that direction, because I do think that sort of my joy of this was her interacting and the sort of human element of this and mm-hmm. sort of seeing, I don't know, seeing the way that she's, like, dealing with her life and sort of suffering, and it's a very human book, and I don't know how I'm going to feel about it if it's just all Skrulls all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they're framing it is that she's going out there to find herself after she's lost a lot of her memories.
This is hanging out in Spain for 6 weeks after graduation.
Precisely. They put a time limit. It says like a year, which mm-hmm. in Marvel continuity, who knows how long that would actually be. But
40 years.
Exactly. But I'm optimistic about it. Do you like the art on this? This book has suffered a lot of art changes. So this
it has.
This guy's supposedly going to be doing it for a while.
I could stand to see this for go on for a while. I think it's very nice. This Carol Danvers is a little vanilla compared to a lot of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's got, like I'm really wondering like what's been going on with her hair. It seems like it's changed 43 times. Like over the Infinity event, and now it's just like standard girl haircut.
You know those women.
I guess so.
They're always changing their hairstyles.
I really wonder what happened to the little punk haircut that she had before. I thought it had some real character.
It'll be back next issue.
I guess she's trying to show solidarity with the little girl that lives with her.
Yes,
we'll have the same haircut.
We look exactly the same. Like, yes. One's a little miniature version.
Yes, you're mini me now. I don't know. I don't get it.
Eh. I like it. I don't know. I felt like it was kind of weird at first, but I've warmed up to it.
No, I pretty much enjoyed it right out the door.
Okay, but
it
was a
high point for this week. Spoilers.
Uh-oh. High point.
Actually, there it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. I mean, Captain Marvel number 1, I am a buy.
Yeah, I am a buy as well.
Double buy. Go buy Captain Marvel number 1. Support this book. Carol Danvers.
I do wish it was Miss Marvel though.
What, the new Miss Marvel?
Of course.
Yeah. Well, that'll be coming out soon.
I know. I'm just about to pee my pants in anticipation, though.
Anticipation. Right.
Broke into your shtick there.
Yeah, I know. Next up is Deadpool number 25. Dot now number 1. Marvel's
whatever that means.
Their numbering system is ridiculous.
They just want to put number 1 on there. It's asinine.
I like they made. I think tacos are number 1. At least it's tacos are good.
Okay.
I don't know if tacos are number 1.
If you say so.
It's on the cover, Eric.
I do see that.
Okay then.
I think that's really asinine though.
It's Deadpool.
I know Deadpool's an asinine character.
That's what you're getting. We have not read a Deadpool solo title yet. So I was going to go for our number 1, but it vanished from the digital library. I guess I don't know if it got pushed back or something. But this is Deadpool number 25, written by Brian Posehn and Jerry Duggan, art by Mike Hawthorne, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Joe Sabino. How would you describe the plot in this one, Eric?
An insane person fights a man in his underwear and then kills a guy with a garbage truck.
There you go.
And then he goes to an airport.
He does. I think that's...
I didn't like hate this, but at the same time, what? What?
I enjoyed some of the gags.
I missed that it was written by Brian Posehn. It really kind of...
It fits.
I wonder why they didn't, like, get in a mosh pit in the middle of this. This is...
They've been writing this whole thing.
I'm not surprised.
This has been at the front of my mind a lot because...
How is it... what do you mean, the whole thing? This is number 1.
Funny guy. They've written all 25 of these issues. It's in the front of my mind because I've been listening to Nerd Poker, and both these guys are on... They both play D&D together.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Duggan is always the most entertaining guy in that podcast. His characters are always the most ridiculous and fun. But this is not a book you buy for the plot. It's about the gags. Mm-hmm. And there was some of it I thought was fun. Some of it fell flat.
Like, why did they put Commissioner Gordon in a garbage truck?
Because it was screwing them over.
Why is their girl Spike Lee on a bike?
Because there had to be someone who interjected themselves with a little dog that got thrown at Crossbones. I do like.
Doesn't make any sense.
I like Crossbones' face when Deadpool throws the dog at him.
What is it he said? You don't throw a dog.
Yeah, I really.
I do like
that's
that.
That's a good gag.
They are that. They are, you know, men after my own heart.
Though. Yeah, it's like 50-50. I know this is not the worst version of Deadpool I've read.
No.
It's not bad. It's just not great. It's good once in a while, I would say. I mean, most of the time, if it's a Deadpool book, you already know if you are going to read it or not.
Yeah. He's like Harley Quinn or something. You know already.
Yeah, and this is like if you're gonna do like comedic Deadpool, I would say this is how you should do it. It's probably this is the way to. I'm a kind of a buy with a caveat.
Yeah, it's not awful. It manages to make it sort of hijinksy and it's fun, and I think the art complements it in a way that doesn't make me want to, like, kill myself.
Yeah.
When you make murdering people sort of the butt of a joke, oftentimes I don't like it.
No.
It doesn't seem very funny to me. But I don't know. This is weird. It's funny. I don't know who I'd recommend it to. I don't know that it's exactly for me, but I don't terribly regret buying it. So I'm kind of a meh on it, but I think I'm a don't buy just sort of because I don't have really any strong draw towards it.
Okay. That's fair enough. There you go. Deadpool, number 25. Split decision.
Split decision, indeed.
He's going to apparently fight Dracula next, so.
I mean, poop, that's exactly what you do on vacation.
You fight Draculas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe even tracksuit Draculas.
I don't think he's going to fight tracksuit Draculas.
That would be weird if he did.
He'd just kill him.
Well, that is how, you know, fights with Dracula go. Someone ends up getting killed.
That's a good point. Or turned. They could end up being, you know, turning into a vampire. No?
Not sure.
Okay. And we're going to move on to DC, our favorite. Our favorite comic book publishing company.
My favoritest.
Yeah. We're going to start off with Superboy, number 29. Fine. Superboy 29, written by Marv Wolfman. Pencils by Andres Guinaldo, Mark Irwin on inks, Travis Lanham doing the letters, with Tanya and Richard Ori on colors. And yes, Eric, this is taken off of Teen Titans.
So glad we could dwell more in that.
We haven't read a Superboy yet. I've been giving us a little tour of the New 52 because, you know, I think we should actually read the books to make before we say how terrible they are. And this book is terrible.
It's not as bad as the Teen Titans was, but it's still pretty not good.
I actually like Teen Titans book more than this. I'm not saying Teen Titans is good, but I like it more than this, which I think this is awful.
Tell me how awful it is, because I don't think that it's awful, but I definitely don't think it's as bad as Teen Titans. Teen Titans was like, it felt like there was something wrong with the brains of every character. This just feels awkward.
It feels
a little bit less insulting, just badly done.
The main character is Superboy,
yeah.
Like the title. He is an awful, he's not an anti-hero, he's not a hero, he's a villain. Is he not a villain?
Seems more or less like it.
Yeah, to me, he's a villain. He's like, and it's just watching him be a villain. But he's not like, it's not like reading a Joker miniseries or something. Like the Azrael Joker miniseries. Have you read that?
I have not.
It's a good series about a villain. It makes him compelling. It shows what's interesting about him as a villain. This is... It's just him, like, really, like, deceiving people in really stupid ways.
Yes.
And I don't even know why. Like, it's not clear why any of this is happening.
I agree. It's really doesn't make a lot of sense where all this is coming from.
Like, he's trying to manipulate the Teen Titans plus this other group of heroes to try and kill all these metahumans. Why does he want to kill all the metahumans?
You see, Teen Titans, I had all these same problems. Like, what the hell's this going on? And it felt like every character's motivation was changing with every page turn, just to be weird and shocking. This at least feels a little bit more consistent. It's just retarded.
I just don't understand why he wants to... they never go into the why.
Yeah, no, and I don't think they need to, because it's stupid.
I would... If instead of pages after page after page of showing how he deceives these people, why are we watching this? Why does this matter? Give me that first. Not just, hey, look, it's this guy in costume, and he's killing all these people in tubes, and there's this giant red thing with a monster face, and the Teen Titans are... trust this character for some reason. I mean, the art is, oh, it's not bad. It's,
I don't really care for
it. I mean, it's not awful. It's just, it's kind of bleh.
It, something about the drawing and the inking, it looks very sort of 90s to me.
Well, yes.
So I'm turned off by it. Who's this? Who are these artists again?
Andres Guinaldo did the pencils.
Yeah, I'm not familiar.
I'm not either. It's DC House style to the nth degree. I'm not even sure. Every time I look at it, I like it less, so I don't.
The cover is gorgeous.
Cover is by
Rafa Sandoval.
It says Carl Kerschel and Mike Atea in the credits.
Where? Because the credits at the start of the page says Rafa Sandoval. Where's the credits page?
The page number 3. It says Kerschel and Mike Atea. They're signed by Kerschel and Atea at the bottom. The credits page is never right.
That explains a lot, then. It does say Kerschel.
The Comixology, you cannot trust what they use. They're always wrong.
I'm glad they're not, you know, professionally publishing comics or anything.
Actually trying to be right about things.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, you had one job, Comixology.
Yeah. This is terrible. Superbike number 29 is terrible. Don't buy it. It's awful. Do not buy.
Yeah, double do not buy.
Double do not buy.
What he said.
And the other DC book of the week is Superman Wonder Woman number 6. Another book we haven't read at this point. I've been resisting reading this because their whole premise of a relationship kind of is bothersome to me to a certain extent.
It's a little strange.
It's very enforced by editorial.
Yeah.
Which is, there's no writer went, you know, who'd be cool if Superman was dating Wonder Woman. It was just the editorial went, you know what, Superman's going to date Wonder Woman, now write this comic book about it.
Yeah.
And this one is them fighting Zod.
Zod and Girl Zod.
Zod and Girl Zod. And I really didn't like this until like the last two pages.
I don't know. It was all right-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the most vanilla flavor of vanilla.
Yeah.
I agree with you about the ending of it is pretty interesting. Splitting one atom is not going to cause an explosion like that.
I was not actually, you know, it's not because of like the scientific,
foundations. I think it's in case anyone out there has a magic sword and they want to blow up some stuff, you can't do it with one atom. That doesn't work.
I find it interesting that Wonder Woman is Han Solo in this relationship, apparently. Superman is Princess Leia.
I think that's the best. That's probably my favorite thing about it.
The last four pages are the thing I like. The whole fight with Zod is just.
It gives a shit.
Yeah. Oh, them fighting Zod. Ooh.
I think that actually is what draws me to this, is that I like that she's the badass. That always works for me, and she's the badass. He's the Boy Scout,
as it should be.
Yeah, no, yes, absolutely. But I like that. I like that she's Han Solo. That's really a good way to point it out. It's a better dynamic, but it's.
If we had gotten with more of that and less of, we need to do this, we need to stop Zod, and watch out for this, and just, it's just a, like, that's when it started getting interesting, four pages from the end, not the whole, you know, 18 pages of just them fighting Zod and Lady Zod, and, you know, them, like, going, you know, we should do this, and, you know, but we should do,
I think that it almost seems like, they feel like they have to put this stuff in and pander to people. You know, like they think that people are going to want like all this really boring action that no one's heart is in. And then the part that's interesting is like this character stuff at the end.
Yeah. And there's a shot in near the, up to that point, at page 15, we see Superman and Wonder Woman defeated on the beach. There is like 8 pages of them fighting, or 9 pages. You could have cut out 5 of those pages and had and given the same impression of them losing, being lost the fight, and then there you get that character stuff. I wish there was more of this than just them, you know, a meaningless fight scene when the end result is what matters.
Yes. It's not, most of it's not even interesting. How many times have we seen Superman and Wonder Woman fight other superhumans?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think I read the credits on this. Charles Soule, writer, Charles Soule, one of the 400 books he's writing. Tony S. Daniel doing the pencils. Bat and Sandu Floria doing the inks, with Tomi Mori on colors. Carlos M. Mangual doing letters. I like the art.
I enjoy it well enough. To me, this is
kind of inoffensive.
Yeah, to me, this is more DC House style. Last book where we talked about, but I think that this is, I like this more than Jim Lee. It's more energy, more artistic, in my opinion, than your typical like Lee knockoff.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly better than the last book that we looked at, but. I think inoffensive is kind of a good way to put most of it. That it's, you just sort of like, that's nice looking. It looks like a comic book. Okay, goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, I like the last 4 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I agree with you.
I don't know. I don't think that's enough to sell the book. I mean, if you told me, oh, you'll enjoy 4 pages of this 24-page comic book, I don't think I'd buy it.
Yeah, go ahead and shell out $3.99 for that.
Yeah, this is a $4 book. DC generally has a lot less $4 books than Marvel, but this is a $4 book, and it's not worth it. Do not buy.
Mm-hmm. Totes, do not buy.
Double do not buy. Next up is our indie book of the week, something we've used as kind of a basis for one of our random character generators. And I thought it was,
it's apropos to bring him back.
Yeah, I thought it was something we should at least, discuss. And it is Magnus Robot Fighter number 1, another one of the Gold Key properties that Dynamite is like relaunching. They've already done Turok Dinosaur Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're doing Magnus Robot Fighter. Written by Fred Van Lente, art by Corey Smith. Mauricio Wallace on colors, Marshall Dillon doing the letters. It was not what I was expecting.
Hmm.
It was very, it came at you. It reminds me kind of like a mixture of The Matrix and that part in Fallout 3 when you are sent back into like the idyllic neighborhood.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
With
the 50s neighborhood where the world isn't blown up.
Yes, exactly. And it's just, I think it's a little bit different enough from those things to make me interested to know what's, intrigued me. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
I had a good time with it.
Yeah.
It's not stellar. And again, it does kind of borrow from those things, so you kind of know where it's going for a lot of it. But I think it's cool. I mean, it doesn't need to be really all that amazing, and when it's just going to be a book about a guy punching robots in half,
yeah,
you just need some sort of prop to set that up, and then I think I'm good. But it's a reasonably solid book, you know?
Yeah, I like it. It's Fred Van Lente. I'm a fan. I've enjoyed a lot of his previous work.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a lot of like little interesting things that intrigue me, and you make me curious, make me want to explore this world a little bit more. I like the art for the most part.
I think it's pretty decent.
The female character that comes in near the end looks a little weird to me.
I think I agree. There's something.
Her torso is really long. Like, yes. Her torso is like 4 foot long.
She's a little stretched.
Yeah. Kind of like a Barbie doll.
She's extra torso.
Yeah. It's not awful. And I think part of it is just her costume design makes her look even more than you would. But it just looks strange.
She's got a unitard and a gambit coat.
She does. And pouches. I think the pouches also make me think. It just reminds me of Rob Liefeld and his awful.
She is kind of dressed exactly like Gambit.
She is. Except her cloak is green instead of brown. But I like it.
I like it well enough. It's not going to rock anyone's world. Honestly, I think that a number one is probably not where I would have jumped in. I would buy this if it had really fun art of him beating the shit out of robots. I don't know that the story is going to compel me into this, but who knows? Maybe it'll be amazing.
He does straight edge chop a robot in the neck.
Yes, he does. I'm looking right at it. He says, "You freaking relax."
Yes,
that's what you do. Is you murder someone and then tell them to relax.
He's taking out some Rock'em Sock'em robots.
Hey, tranquilo, baby.
But anyway, that's Magnus Robot Fighter number one. I am a buy.
Yeah, I'm a squishy buy on that, squishy. But it's a buy nonetheless.
Yeah, it's set up. It makes me interested in number two, which I think is the thing you need to, the main objective.
Yes,
with a number
exactly.
One.
I agree. It's getting me to beating up some robots.
Yes.
Or some hardcore accountants. Accounting.
Hardcore accountant?
Yeah. He's Magnus. He's an accountant.
That's a good point.
And he works with Prime. Robot Fighter and Prime. We established this many episodes ago.
You are always correct, Eric. You always remind me of things.
Yeah. You say. This is why you put this in there. It's a callback to stuff.
Well, it's Fred Van Lente. That's what really caught my eye. I'd also like to mention, I didn't read a lot of other stuff this week. I'd also like to mention Fantastic Four number 2 came out. I didn't like it.
I feel vindicated that you didn't like it.
Not as strong feeling as I did about the first one. It's kind of even stretching the credit, like my suspension of disbelief even further. I did buy Black Widow number 4, which came out this week, was quite excellent.
Not surprised about that.
Yeah, it's getting better still. It's really...
I had to pick that up then.
It's setting into, like, it's actually... We're entering into, like, kind of a ongoing story. And has a giant Russian guy with a minigun.
Is he Comrade Nuke?
No, he's not. He's actually super religious and has tattoos all over him, like including a like.
Does he have a Russian flag on his face?
No, he has a Russian Orthodox cross tattooed on his forehead, like Charles Manson.
Nice.
Yeah.
So far, this sounds a lot like Nuke.
He's not nearly as obnoxious as Nuke is.
Okay.
But it's
like Charles Manson.
He has a giant beard like Rasputin.
That's great.
Yeah, he's like a giant walking tank. It's really good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I definitely suggest buying that. It's excellent. Phil Noten and Nathan Edmondson doing some good work there. The Notos.
Noto.
Nodos. Yeah, Nodos. Nothing else to mention, I think. And with that. Eric, do you have your little fancy glasses on?
Well, no. What's happening?
You should grab them.
I should grab them?
Yeah, because it's time for Nerd Boy Book Club.
Oh, my goodness. Get our reading glasses.
Yep, exactly. Nerd Boy Book Club is the segment where we read a longer collected work. We give you advance warning, so you can read along with us. And
you should, is what you were trying to say.
You should. You should read along with us. Yeah,
it would make you a better person.
Yeah. Like what Eric says.
Yes.
And
you should like what I say.
Yeah, exactly. And we discuss it. We talk about it. We either recommend it or tell you that it's good kindling.
Mm-hmm. Like any book club, we have intense debate.
Intense debate. This week we are doing The Sinestro Corps War by Jeff Johns and Dave Gibbons, Peter J. DeMasi, even Rice. A lot of, like a good jillion people worked on this book because there's like three or different, it's a giant DC crossover. It had a lot of different, its fingers in a lot of pies.
A small army of nerds.
Small army of nerds. This is the middle segment, kind of a big three-part arc of Rebirth, this, and then Black Knight, which came out, significantly later by Jeff Johns, where he, kind of redid all the core ethos of the Green Lanterns and kind of retconned some stuff away, changed some stuff. Much hyped, much critically acclaimed, sold 1 million copies. He is now the lead writer of DC. I mean, arguably, between him and Scott Snyder. I would say he's writing Justice League. He's writing Forever Evil. I would say he's the lead writer of DC.
What a great job he's doing.
Yeah, Forever Evil's terrible. And I was thinking, I should read some of his older stuff and see how he got where he is and all that. Sinestro Corps War is fairly simple. Sinestro basically forges his own Lantern Corps, powered by fear instead of willpower, which the Green Lanterns are, and just tries to destroy the Green Lanterns, tries to take control of shit. It's not really complicated.
They do their best to make it seem complicated.
That's true.
That's the thing that really bugged me about reading this, mm-hmm. is it particularly early on, every damn thing was a friggin' mess. I'm not going to say it was necessarily hard to follow because, like you said, it's pretty clear what's going on here. But it's just like, I don't know. Everything is so stuffed full of unnecessary dialogue and things happening,
mm-hmm.
that it's just a big jumble. It's just way too much. This story could be told much more effectively leaving some things out, but it's got to be so big and overblown. I don't know. It's just too much for me, for the most part.
Yeah, this is a lot of punching.
Mm-hmm.
There is a shit ton of punching and slicing and kicking and fighting in this.
Yeah, there's enough.
This is the trade that collects the essentials. I mean, there's a lot of extra stuff that they published in the Tales of the Lantern Corps, which has, other... more fighting, from what I've heard. But even in the Essentials, there's not a shit ton of, talking and discussing things. Most of it is just punching and, big fight scenes.
Maybe we got a couple of different books. Because there are several books where it is a lot of just dense discussion. But they're not really saying anything important.
Maybe that's what I took away from it, is that...
Yeah, it's a bunch of words to say the same things over and over. They talked about rewriting the rules from the Book of Oa, mm-hmm. or whatever in the hell. They talked about that 3 or 4 separate times before they finally did it.
Yes, exactly.
There is some genuinely important stuff, and some of it's fairly compelling. But most of it is just nothing. It's just saying the same things over and over, oh, God, we're going to get hurt, we're going to die, stuff is going to happen, let's go fight. I mean, it's a lot of wind, it's a lot of emptiness.
Yeah,
and a lot of it is not very compelling.
No, the first thing you said was there's a lot of this stuff is just fluff and can be done.
Yes.
And some, a lot of these giant fight scenes are almost impossible to read because there's 40 guys, there's 40 people on a page,
mm-hmm.
all doing something, but you don't know what they're doing. They're just kind of there swinging at something else, one unidentifiable green thing, swinging at some unidentifiable yellow thing.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly difficult to, I'm sure, to include, to draw 40 different yes. characters, but it's so difficult to do, and yet it lessens the impact of any of these fights. You don't know what's happening. I can't see any details. I get no connection to any of these characters you're fighting. You just get mindless blurbs. Look, this Green Lantern's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean anything.
No, it doesn't.
When they constantly are saying, oh, we're losing, we're getting murdered, the Green Lantern Corps is constantly just... you hear in the first half of the book, that's all they're saying.
Yes.
We are getting killed. We are losing terribly. It doesn't... You can't tell. The fights are constantly... It seems they're even matched at every fight. They are getting... All these Green Lanterns getting killed. And? It doesn't seem to affect anything.
It stresses me out to read it.
They get killed, and then they move on to the next fight scene, where they yep. and more get killed, and they complain more about their losing, and then they move on to the next fight scene. And nothing bad. I mean, a bunch of Green Lanterns I don't care, I've never known about or never heard about, get killed.
Yeah, and that I think is... There's not a lot of emotional resonance in here. Like, I think that the characters that are the most compelling are Sinestro,
mm-hmm.
because they have this actually very interesting backstory for him.
Mm-hmm.
There's both the Superman, Cyborg Superman. I forget his name. Hank Henshaw. He's pretty compelling.
And Superboy Prime.
Yeah, his backstory makes him pretty interesting, and Superboy Prime's backstory makes him pretty interesting, and they're the bad guys in this.
Yes.
And they're, because they have a backstory, they have something compelling to fight for, they have seemingly good reasons to do things. I'm sort of rooting for them by the end of this.
This is supposedly it breathed life into the Green Lanterns again. Like, they were, mm-hmm. They're so washed up old ideas in there. And then Geoff Johns he brought up, and this is where the idea of all those Lantern Corps, the colors, all those colors came about. And later on after this is when they are filled out. And now we have all those different colored Lantern Corps.
And it seems like it was a huge idea for him. People love it.
Yeah, I just don't care about any of these characters.
Understandably so. I mean, they don't give you good reasons to give a damn about them. Like, maybe a little bit for Hal.
Yeah.
Because they show a little bit of his backstory, and it's kind of compelling, but it's also... You know, it's kind of a little vanilla, a little bit stock. It's something that you've seen before, you know. Hal is, like, the most generic character. I don't know.
It's funny because, they replaced him with Kyle Rayner, back in the day. Because, everyone complained about that. And then they made, like... Kyle Rayner is, like, I think it's funny that when he gets taken over by Parallax in this,
yes.
that he's like, this is cool. This is, it's almost making fun of that, like, because that's when he came out, he's like, he was the cool Green Lantern. He's right. really slick. He's the young, cool one. And it's just, that amused me. But it's like replacing vanilla with vanilla. It's not like Kyle Rayner is, like, super... interesting Green Guy Gardner is the only interesting Green. I mean, like, it's John Stewart's interesting because he's a military guy, and Guy Gardner is interesting because he's kind of a jerk.
Yes, I came away from this really kind of liking Guy Gardner.
Yeah, he's because he actually has, like, character and personality.
Yes, he's a bit of a scumbag, and that makes him entertaining. But, like, Hal Jordan and Kyle Rayner are like, they're like international male models with no personality. There's nothing interesting or flawed about them that makes them a rich character. Like, I'm literally looking at a picture. I assume this is, yeah, this is Kyle. Mm-hmm. when he's in that fake, I'm trapped in, you know, inside parallax, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks like the guy that played Greg in Dharma and Greg.
That's true. He does. I didn't think about that, but he really does look like,
it really does.
He does look like that guy.
It's like, how could you be just a more generic male? It's like your picture beside the word man in the dictionary.
Yeah. The big thing that continues on, aside from all those colored ring, all the different colored lantern cores, is the fact that Green Lanterns can kill after this. Do you think that makes it interesting?
It seems senseless that, like, the intergalactic space police wouldn't be able to kill things.
True.
It seems really strange that they wouldn't be able to. So on that level, you know, I get it. It makes sense. But on, I don't know. It makes me think of Identity Crisis again.
Mm.
Just sort of making it. It's not really quite like that, you know. Let's just make it have lots of death and people dying for the sake of doing it, for the sake of making it more adult,
mm-hmm.
for the sake of making it less childish. So, I guess I don't really have that negative an opinion on it.
Yeah, I don't.
I kind of want to, but I don't think I do.
No, I don't. I just feel like, sure, it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's just, okay. I don't. Like, it's, I don't, I like the fact that some of the Green Lanterns don't kill even after they're permitted to. I think because that happens, I can't criticize it much. And it does make sense. Like, if you're a cop, you're going to have to use lethal force to stop people occasionally. It's not like, it's, it's just interesting that that's the thing a lot of people come away with it from. Like, that. Oh, they can kill now.
Yeah.
But I don't... I think it's made too big a... Like, I think the funny thing is that at that point is when the battle kind of swings.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you go, oh, Green Lanterns are fine. Because they instantly start just killing all the Yellow Lanterns everywhere, one left or right. And, oh, they're good. They win. They're going to win. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I guess it's too clear a solution. Like, it's just, oh, that's all he needed. All he had to do was be able to kill him. Yeah.
Well, it admittedly, it helps a lot if people are killing the fuck out of you.
Yes.
If you kill them back, then you might be okay.
Yeah. How do you feel about this Sodom Yacht character? The Superman Green Lantern, basically?
Yeah. I don't know. It's not exactly the chocolate and peanut butter for me. I liked him okay, but he's just generic superhero.
Yeah.
And his instead of making an interesting and fleshed out character, let's just give him more powers.
I like the little backstory they give him about how he's like been brainwashed to hate, trying to make him brainwashed to hate aliens.
No, I did enjoy that as well. So, I mean, I can't, maybe I'm a little off base in that they did try to make an interesting character, but...
But the problem is they punctuate that with him just fighting Superboy Prime through a graveyard for forever. Like, it goes on and on and on.
It certainly did.
I just don't... Just there's just so much fighting. You get desensitized to it. It doesn't mean anything anymore. After you read 10 issues of people beating the shit out of each other, another two. Oh, this is the climax of this fight? Meh. Whatever. Hey, look. And then I do want to know what you think about the fact that the final fight between Sinestro, Hal Jordan, Kyle Rayner is that they don't have their powers. They don't have their rings.
They just
have a fist fight.
I dig that, honestly. That it's just like they're just down to nothing and just, I don't know, using whatever they have left. That actually, like, I think it could have been in a cooler setting, but I just sort of think every story should end in a fist fight on the moon.
I was going to say, like, on top of a lava volcano.
A volcano is acceptable.
Yeah, like in episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the lava fields. That makes sense, right?
Well, admittedly, yeah, that's pretty cool. Why does Henshaw rip that woman in half? That's so stupid.
Because he's mean?
It's like he digs up the invisible girl and then rips her in half.
I don't ask me to.
It did bother me that his backstory was he was Mr. Fantastic in the DC universe.
Well, that's what he was. Originally he was a joke about the Fantastic Four.
Amazing.
And now he just, I don't understand his motivation. The fact that, yes, build me up and make me powerful so you can kill me.
Yeah, it is a little stupid, but I think that, I don't know, it's asinine, but something about that emotion of not being, you know, not being able to die is kind of sad. So I was rooting for him a little bit. I was like, go die, fucker.
Yeah, I think a lot of these threads in this book you can see in the New Justice League and Forever Evil.
Yes.
Where it's a lot of just nonsense talking and dumb punching and not much else. And all the characters are kind of just sound the same.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why it's so popular. Is there something wrong with us, Eric, that we can't comprehend the greatness of this?
I think that it's just clear that, I mean, there's a reason that so many of the stuff, like we're reading Hawkeye and Black Widow and all these Marvel books that are going in this clearly different direction, and we liked almost everything that Infinity did. And DC's going this route. And there's someone out there that reads this and thinks, this is awesome. And we're clearly not that.
Here, I had pulled up a few of, I was looking at the Amazon product page for this book, and I was looking at some of the five-star reviews, and I think I'll read one. Well, I guess
we got some choice stuff here.
We get a good, I guess, an insight into the minds of someone who really, who loves this book and probably
the DC fans.
Yes, here we go. One of the best graphic novels I've read in ages, literally.
I guess that's true.
The Green Lantern Corps have never looked this good, with twists, surprises, and an immense looming threat of the core throughout the series. This series tilted on strong elements and solid action. Spoilers, folks! Sinestro was always a thorn in the Green Lantern's side, but never like this. Is there a single reader who can tell me they are not taken aback by this splash page that contained four other galactic-level threats who are going to be part of this terror spree across the universe of Sinestro's core? That, with a worrying factor that the Lanterns are having to fight the Sinister Corps members with one hand tied behind their backs, use of lethal force denied, how ingenious is that? And even with the new Ion, the threat level remains till the end? Not to mention that priceless brief moment with Batman. Ingenious. DC outdid themselves here.
That's by an 8-year-old with a thesaurus.
And they don't like World War Hulk, apparently. They mention that later. Which, I don't love World War Hulk, but it's certainly, I think it's better than this.
I agree it's better than this. I enjoy World War Hulk.
The Sinister, here's a different one. Also a 5-star review. The Sinister Accord War storyline has just jolted me to life again. In one word, the storyline is iconic. This book is the perfect combination of story, art, and dramatic buildup. No Oxford comma, that disappoints me. I am hooked again.
You're really going there, huh?
Yeah, no Oxford comma.
You're one of those.
I am one of those. God damn it. Use an Oxford comma. Jesus.
It's not really that necessary.
Yes, it is. It is necessary. Here's another one. Epic is a word that is so overused these days. Unfortunately, there really is no other way to describe this book. Just imagine the most powerful force of evil in the universe, fear in this case, going up against the strongest willpower in the universe. The result is one of the greatest stories ever in Green Lantern lore. Art is great, both the writing and story are superior. So, I mean, that's several tastes of what people are thinking about this. They think it's amazing.
Yeah.
I just can't. It was a slog.
Mm.
It was difficult. I was bored.
I completely agree.
I didn't want to finish, but I did.
It's just so clear. I don't know. We seem to fit very neatly in the Marvel category. And even this is a couple of years ago, and I think that having read Civil War,
mm-hmm.
that I think this is sort of from that time period. Am I right? Am I roughly about the same time as Civil War? I would say 2007 at the latest.
2007, yeah.
Damn! Right on the nose.
Yep. So, 2 years, within 2 years.
Yeah, so I think that this sort of fits sort of into that epic right there. That we're in sort of a different movement now. Marvel's pushing things in a very different way. You know, characters are becoming more human and more relatable. And DC feels very much like they're trapped in this time period.
Yes, just giant events where it's just, I don't know, trying to be more than it is.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like. Infinity wasn't necessarily, I mean, it wasn't a strong thinking event or anything,
mm-hmm.
but it balanced big action with quiet moments, character moments.
Yeah. And it as a result, you felt the resonance of that.
Yes.
Like you felt the big looming doom and it worked.
Yes.
This doesn't.
No, when there's 12 issues of just nonstop punching,
yeah.
with and the talking, it just dwells on the same fear. Brr, brr, we have to change the laws.
Yeah,
just do it. I don't. Why is there deliberation? I don't like. It just makes me not like any of these characters.
Yes,
even the villains or the heroes. I just don't care. It's just I'm just ambivalent. Which is not what you want.
No.
You want some kind of feeling. And I just don't feel anything about it. I don't care at all. And I think it speaks a lot to the current DC universe and its environment. And what they're marketing to, I guess.
It really does.
I mean, Geoff Johns is... It's just... I think there's a joke around, he has to have maimings in every book. Because they've already had two in Forever Evil. Like, the evil Green Lantern got his arm chopped off by Sinestro.
Okay.
And then the evil Flash got his leg frozen by Captain Cold, a Flash villain, and then broken off.
Did he get his crotch kicked off?
It did not get his crotch kicked off. It just reinforces this whole mindless violence thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Sinestro Corps War, Green Lantern, Sinestro Corps War, Geoff Johns and a slew of others, including Dave Bloody Gibbons. What do you want to do next week, Eric? So next week, folks, we had just mentioned a review that didn't like World War Hulk in comparison to this. We're going to do that next week. So World War Hulk, the crossover event. I think we'll just do the core. I think, how many issues was it? It wasn't a whole bunch. So World War Hulk 1-5. All right. Yeah. So next week we're doing World War Hulk. Read along.
Read about the Green Meanie.
Green Meanie. And with that, it will bring us to a close. Divisible by 11.
Divisible by 11. And also exactly. 4, but that's less and exciting.
That's, yeah, it's not as interesting.
A little bit more ordinary.
So, folks, we are the Hanson Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at HansonBoysComicsHour.com. You can also find us at Facebook.com/HansonBoysComicsHour. You can like us there, and it will be in your feed.
Mm-hmm. We'll feed you.
Not in the food way, though. In kind of the internet feed way.
I will link you to some cheeseburgers.
All right. See, folks, I don't know how you can match that offer anywhere else. Mm-hmm. What other podcasts are going to link you to cheeseburgers?
It's going to be good times.
Cheeseburgers are pretty damn good. We are also on iTunes. Search for Hanson Boys Comics Hour. You can find us there. Like us. Subscribe. Leave us reviews. We like good reviews. Please do so. You can also find us on Tumblr at HansonBoysComicsHour.tumblr.com. And we are on Twitter at HBC Hour. You can tweet at us there. You can find my Twitter. It is Mixmaster Show, MixmasterCereal. And I'm on the same name at Tumblr. Eric, where can they find you and your things online?
You can see my portfolio. You can go to freewillunlimited.com and you can see most of the things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
So, folks, leave us comments, leave us reviews, leave us suggestions, criticisms, questions, advice, you know, all those things. We like them. We like to hear it. And come check us out at MegaCon. Next one you hear will be afterwards.
Yep.
Yep.
After the con.
After the con. So until then, have a good one.
Rock and roll.